Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast now in our 18th year. I'm your host, Jess Marquez, and our guest today is Michael Silberling, CEO of Metropolitan Gaming, to talk about his impressive and globetrotting career, the current state of the UK gaming market, and the future goals for Metropolitan within that market and beyond. Today's GGB podcast is sponsored by IGT. IGT is paving the way of cashless gaming yet again, with 14 properties live in North America. Resort Wallet combined with IGT Pay is quickly becoming the preferred method of cashless gaming for both players and operators. Learn more at igt.com/cashless. Few gaming executives in the world today have had a wider range of commercial, tribal, domestic, and international experiences than Michael Silberling, CEO of Metropolitan Gaming. In 2021, when Silverpoint Capital took over Caesars European, Middle Eastern, few gaming execs in the world today have had a wider range of commercial, tribal, domestic, and international experiences than Michael Silberling, CEO of Metropolitan Gaming. Back in 2021, when Silverpoint Capital took over Caesars European, Middle Eastern, and African operations to form Metropolitan, Silberling was tapped to take the reins, and he and his team are looking to take Metro to the top of a UK market that finds itself very much in flux. He spoke to GGB Managing Editor Jess Marquez from his London office in July. Michael, thank you so much for joining me today. It's a great pleasure to have you on. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me. Hello from London.
Yes, it's early morning for me. It's kind of late afternoon for you, so it's nice for you to join me today. Usually in these interviews, I like to start with the guests first, and this one is no different. And I was looking at your experience, and I've said multiple times on the show before that I'm just a LinkedIn fiend. You know, it's such a great resource for me to just quickly learn about, you know, some of these people that I talk to. And I was genuinely, really, honestly impressed by your list of experiences. I mean, it pretty much touches every sector of the gaming industry, from U.S., international, commercial, tribal. I mean, you name it, it's in there. So could you kind of just do a run through of like this crazy experiences and kind of what led you to this point with Metro?
Sure. You know, I've worked in New Zealand, Australia, Africa, Middle East, Asia, Canada, throughout the United States, South America. If you're familiar with the gaming industry, if you can imagine the licensing burden from be it Missouri or the UK or Nevada, any of these places. So, you know, I've worked for, as you say, private and public companies. I've worked for family business, private equity, tribal, government. So I certainly have had the range. And, you know, through that, it's always been casino centric, but I've had zoos and game parks and hotels and restaurants and nightclubs and golf courses and marinas and, you know, you name it. I've done it. And I have to say, I didn't really set out on a path to do that. The geographic scope, the casino industry. I'm from Silicon Valley. I graduated with an MBA from UCLA. I thought I'd go back to Silicon Valley, and I saw that there was a company recruiting in Reno and Tahoe, and I've always loved Tahoe, and I'm familiar with Reno as well. Having gone to elementary school in Washoe County, lived on Old Franktown Road. So, you know, I thought I'd go work for a few years in the casino business and head back to Silicon Valley. And that was right when the casino business was expanding internationally, tribal, riverboats. It was a very exciting time joining what was Promise Companies, who subsequently became Harrah's and then Caesars. They were only in Nevada and Atlantic City at that point, but right when I joined, they were doing all these sectors, in international, in tribal, in riverboats. So I ended up less than a year after joining in New Zealand as the first U.S. employee, joining a fellow from Australia and a woman from New Zealand in what was the largest private equity investment in the history of New Zealand. And I did that for a few years. We opened that successfully. The Sky Tower, you know, I mentioned zoos and game parks. We had the Sky Tower, which is still the iconic element of the Auckland skyline today. And I went back to Las Vegas, and I thought a little bit, should I go back to Silicon Valley, or am I going to go all in this rapidly growing and expanding casino business? And I decided to go all in the casino business. I've always asked myself with these different jobs, can I do the job and contribute? Will I learn and grow my skill set? And will it be interesting and fun? And, you know, answering those questions in the affirmative has literally led me all over the world. And once again, in a casino-centric manner, into all of these different operational zones. And, you know, I'm proud that I left Sky City in New Zealand and they hired me back in Australia. I'm proud that I left, you know, Harrah's Caesars in Reno and they hired me back in the Midwest and subsequently the UK. I'm proud that I left Silver Point in Las Vegas and they've hired me back in the UK. So I can't have done everything wrong. But, you know, earlier in my career, I looked at, can I get more revenue under management? Can I get more employees under management? Can I get the size of the properties under management? I think I'm at the stage in my career now, which is, you know, can I participate in the equity position? And is there upside in these businesses, you know, which is very, very interesting to me. So I'm no longer saying I need to manage the multi-billion dollar companies and properties, but, you know, what's the business opportunity, which is, you know, equally fascinating to me at this stage in my career. So I don't know if that answered your question, but certainly it's taken me around the globe.
Well, definitely. Yeah. And I wouldn't expect, you know, with that range of experience, I wouldn't expect a direct answer, right? I mean, that's not how these things work. And it's cool to know that, you know, despite our various paths, that we still have some common ground, Washoe County alums. So that's nice to know. So with reference to the London/UK market overall, I know that you had spent some time previously with London clubs, and obviously now you're back in the market. So what was it, something particular about the UK or London specifically that was appealing to you that made you want to go back, especially, you know, when at the time it was kind of still in the middle of COVID and we didn't really know, it was a lot of uncertainty. So what is it about the UK market that you find appealing?
Well, look, I don't always follow the advice of buy low, sell high. But, you know, the hospitality business worldwide, the casino business worldwide has really been brought to its knees by the pandemic and COVID and closure. And the business that Silver Point bought here was no exception to that, you know, a proud business with a long history and great assets, but had been forced to close. And it was clear that Caesars had a domestic US focus. You know, why is it clear? Because they said that in public statements that they had a domestic US business. So you had this, you know, somewhat unloved overseas assets that had been closed, had been underinvested in. And Silver Point, who I said I've worked for before, you know, really thought that by putting a little bit of attention in the size and scope of the business that might have been below Caesar's radar. And a rising tide floats all boats. So coming out of COVID and reopening the business, you know, we thought that we could get this business back on its feet again. So, you know, that's the list, a new ownership that I've worked for before, an owner that's experienced in the gaming sector and willing to invest. Caesars had really not paid much attention and invested in these smaller assets overseas. So I think it's a very exciting time for the company as we rebirth from COVID, and we have a new owner that's very focused on this size and scale of business. And as we'll probably talk about later, we've done a lot of things in a short period of time.
Well, and yeah, exactly. And I kind of want to, you know, as somebody with as diverse of a range of experiences as yourself, I mean, I have to imagine that even for you, the last 2 years, you know, in this role has been sort of a whirlwind. I mean, even the people that I talked to that have been, you know, in their same position for 10 plus years, these last 2 years have been. So what's it been like for you and the team since taking over?
I mean, it's almost like starting a new business, right? There were so many employees that have been furloughed, all the businesses are shut. So you're really deciding how much money to deploy into this business. How many people do you hire back? How quickly do you hire them back? How much capital do you put into the business? How much do you infuse into the marketing programs, et cetera? So, you know, in the last 2 years, and I have to admit that throughout the world, I imagine the US as well, but certainly in Europe and UK, there's been some macroeconomic headwinds. So we've had three prime ministers, dealt with COVID like everybody else, had four chancellors, two monarchs, the largest European war since World War II, pushing energy costs and inflation to double-digit levels. Depending on your opinion on Brexit, it's and the pandemic, it's certainly difficult to find hospitality staff. As chefs is an example, croupiers are an example. There was a large portion of our workforce that were not naturalized UK and had challenges with Brexit coming back into the country. So, you know, a lot of stuff happening, but despite that, we purchased a new casino, Park Lane. We sold our South Africa business. We launched a new brand. We rebranded, refurbished, and relaunched Metropolitan Mayfair. We built a new loyalty program. We have a new app. We have a new online site. We have, you know, kept some very, very strong management, but brought on some new folks as well. We're looking forward to, you know, what happens with the white paper. So no one's ever accused me of being a patient person, and I always want to do more faster. But when I look back at the, you know, less than 24 months that I've been here, we've done a lot.
Definitely. And, you know, you touched on a lot of things there, and I kind of want to parse, you know, some of them out as we go. But I want to start with actually, and here I'm chuckling to myself because here we are, two Americans talking about London. But what is the state? I'm curious, you know, what is the state of the London market specifically in 2023? I was there earlier this year for the first time in ICE, and it was just really a cool experience for me just to see, you know, gaming in a new light and see it, you know, in a new way, which I, as we've talked about a lot, I'm sure you've seen many different markets. So what's London gaming as of right now in 2023? I know you guys have some venues in the market. Are you looking for more growth potential? Are you content with your current holdings? London, just what's London?
Yeah, so we have five licenses deployed across four venues with a spare license to deploy as well. I mentioned we bought Park Lane, we refurbished and reopened Metropolitan Mayfair. I would love to do some work in Leicester Square, which is perhaps the UK's equivalent of Times Square in terms of high visitation there. London is such a dynamic place. Despite my accent, I do have UK citizenship. I have been here before. I think Samuel Johnson said, when you're tired of London, you're tired of life. and in one sense, that's great because you have so many people here from so many backgrounds and so many different things to do. But on the other hand, you have very fierce competition for the leisure dollar when you are here, between sports and West End shows and, you know, movie premieres and all the rest. So, you know, you really need to be on top of your game. London, I think, has several micro markets. Mayfair has some of the top high end, particularly table game play in the world, with domestic UK folks, with people, but largely international visitors from the Middle East, from Asia, from India, et cetera. So, you know, the level of play in London is equal to anything that I've seen in Las Vegas as I've gone around the world. Our other casinos, we have two in Mayfair, which is, I describe as this high-end market. We have one in Leicester Square, which is the most visited place and, you know, the most foot traffic of anywhere in Europe. So that's much more of a high volume place. And we have one over by Edgware Road, which is a largely ethnic Middle Eastern area as well. So you've got very different customer demographics. And, you know, we are pro London, having bought a new casino, having refurbished and reopened another casino. That said, we haven't seen the international visitation come back to London in the gaming sector as quickly as we would want it to. We didn't have the economic stimulus package, which I guess is not international, that's kind of domestic UK business, but we didn't have that money going into the system like it did in the US, which has its own dynamics, because some of that money made its way into leisure spend, and some of that leisure spend in the US, be it movie theaters, sports tickets, or casinos, I imagine would have helped. So, you know, it is, we are doing, you know, consistently year over year better, much better than the year before, but our aspirations for the business are greater still. And for that to happen, just one example of many, China was in lockdown until very recently. We would like the Chinese business to resume visiting London, and that hasn't happened yet. So I won't go through the whole list, but while we're pleased to be in London and with everything we've done, we still would like to see more, better, faster in town.
Resort Wallet from IGT provides a digital wallet for all your players' gaming and retail needs. Your players will love the convenience of IGT's cashless gaming solution with none of the hassles associated with using cash. And with IGT Pay, IGT's exclusive payment gateway, your players can fund their cashless wagering accounts from multiple external sources simultaneously. The benefits of cashless gaming are amazing. No more waiting in lines at ATMs to get cash, no more waiting in lines to redeem your tickets, and no more waiting for service when your ticket printer jams. Learn more at igt.com/cashless.
Well, it's fascinating how, you know, despite all the differences in microcosms, you know, Las Vegas and London still kind of have the same fundamental problem still, and that's the lack of, you know, the return of the international travel. That's fascinating. And definitely a great city. I can't wait to go back, that's for sure. Speaking more in the terms of demographics, and this is something that, again, you know, again, touching on your experience, I'm sure you have a very astute knowledge of, but how do UK players differ from US players in their wants and kind of preferences and such?
And I described all the different, you know, continents and countries and places I've worked before. You know, I think there's more ways that players are the same, right? They want a safe environment. They want to feel they have a chance to win. They want a variety of product. They want service and to be rewarded and recognized. They like a good meal and drink. It's largely an entertainment experience for their leisure dollar. And I found that in South Africa outside of Johannesburg. And I found that in Australia. And I found that in South America and Punta del Este, wherever I go. You know, what is different is largely the customer demographic and the regulatory environment, because the regulatory environment shapes to some extent the type of venue that you can build. So as an extreme example, we can only have 20 slot machines per venue currently in the UK. So where you would typically see tremendously more machines in the US, and to the extent the machines have a female majority player bias, and we have relatively more table games, so we would have more males than females in the UK business than we would in the US business. And that's not because how we want to build the business or how we want to market the business. That's just the way the regulatory regime is set up. Someone could spin £50,000 on a roulette wheel, but we have stakes and limits, £2, £5 on slot machines. So it's quite... trying to be nice here, it's quite counterintuitive to me how the government decides someone can spend £50,000 at risk on a roulette wheel and can't put more than a few pounds at risk on a machine. But that really, you know, to a large extent dictates and limits what we can build. And I also described the, even in London, these micro markets, Leicester Square is near Chinatown. You know, we have a large Asian market there. You can come into my place and get dim sum or noodle soup or duck fried rice or whatnot. And yet my place over on Edgware Road is largely Middle Eastern. So if you're going to come there, I'm going to serve you hummus and shishtuk and hot meze and cold meze. So I think those are the two things that differ, is kind of the demographics and the regulatory environment.
Well, it's interesting how you touched on the regulatory part of it, because that was the nice segue into my next kind of line of questioning. But, you know, it's pretty impossible in this day and age, you know, to talk about the UK market without a lot of the, you know, regulatory headwinds that have been made in the last year or so. I mean, I can only speak from my experience. I mean, I remember doing so many stories and so many articles about the lead up to the publication of the white paper and the aftermath since. And it's just... It's interesting to say the least. And obviously, as an American who is not used to the UK market, it's tough to really make wide, you know, assessments or analyzations or anything like that. But as somebody, you know, who's literally on the ground, you know, as an operator, what has been kind of the reception of since the publication, and kind of I want to start first on how it's affected the retail casino space. Obviously, it was very much centered on online gaming, but how is it? How have you seen it affect your land-based business at all?
Well, it has been a period of time, isn't it? I think they announced the review in 2019. If you told me it was 4 or 6 or 8 times that they delayed the announced published date, I would remember how high, no matter how high the number went, of the number of times they delayed publication, I would believe you.
We were running.
The reality is, it's all vaporware right now, right? You know, it's not really in place. To have a little bit of a laugh, the government published its white paper, now it wants to talk about what it published. So they're in what's called consultation now, which is they're consulting with the various interest groups, some of which are, you know, pro gaming, and some of which are, you know, have questions and concerns. So they're taking what they've published and they're discussing that with various constituents. What we've seen is very positive. I like to take a customer-centric point of view. So, you know, if what happens with more machines happen, that will give customers more choice. And, you know, we've heard various vendors, in addition to IGT and Novomatic, that are now talking about coming to market. So, you know, I don't want to name them and put pressure or be wrong, but, you know, if some of these world-class machine manufacturers do come to the UK, the customer is going to do nothing but benefit from the increased choices that are available to them. Trying not to get into acronym world, you know, the RNG, the random number generator. So if I have an electronic table game, which has been a huge source of growth throughout the world, and you see the stadium setups in Macau and Vegas, they're quite exciting, and you see them at the gaming shows displayed. I can only have really roulette because I need to have a live wheel with a live ball. I don't necessarily have to have a live dealer, but I can't do that with blackjack and baccarat because I can't really get an electronic machine to handle live cards. So it has to be a random number generator to do a computer simulation to give people the chance of playing electronic baccarat, electronic table games, some of these other pieces, which once again is greater customer choice and typically greater pricing flexibility as well. You know, I'm loath to put a 5-pound blackjack table there because I have to pay for the electricity and the cost of a dealer and everything else. But if it's just electronic table game, I can put a 1-pound or a 5-pound blackjack offering out there and have customers having greater price flexibility as well. Cashless is being discussed. You know, I don't know about you, but I don't carry cash around anymore. And in London, there's so many great buskers, street musicians plying their trade. I used to always have a few coins, you know, or a small note to give to a saxophonist or, you know, whomsoever, some, you know, a naturally gifted young child playing the violin on the street corner. I loved that about being in London. But I just don't carry cash anymore. And yet we're not allowed to go currently into a cashless environment, which was in the white paper and we're now under consultation on. And the last, and there's more topics, but the last one I'll talk on is credit. You know, if you are running domestic policy, a thing that you want to do is to bring in someone from overseas that will gamble, and potentially at the end of the year, some will win, some will lose, but ostensibly the casino is supposed to be ahead at the end of the year. So now you have this economic importation of foreign currency and the economic multiplier effect of money coming across a border. Nevada's seen that with California, Nevada's seen that with Asian play. It's just a tremendous economic benefit, and yet we can't give credit to someone from overseas. They're not going to come with 50,000 pounds in a paper bag. They're not allowed to bring 50,000 pounds cash in a paper bag. And yet that's a customer that you want in your casino. And I want to be able to offer that customer credit. So these are just a few of the items: more machines, random number generator, cashless credit. There's a few items that are under consultation that will all be positive for the business. And I hope it moves from a white paper and consultation and what I would describe as vaporware to actually something that we can, you know, we're looking at our casinos to see where we can put in more machines, you know, right now. We want to go as fast as we possibly can. I think on behalf of the customers and on behalf of our shareholders and on behalf of the people that collect tax in the UK and the people in the UK that want more employment and the people in the UK that want capital investment. And, you know, all these things are positive in these economic trying times. So let's go, go, go as fast as we can, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and speaking of expansion, you know, you guys also recently launched your online platform as well, which again ties into the, you know, the white paper in the terms of that's what was mainly centered around was, you know, the harms or potential harms of online gaming. Could you talk a little bit about the, you know, your platform and kind of what you wanted it, how you wanted it to launch and kind of how it's gone in the short time since? I believe it's about a little over a month old. Am I right?
Yeah, I think we're getting close to two.
Okay.
Gotcha. Just a baby, just a baby.
So what was the timing of that specific to, you know, everything that was going on, or was that just the scheduled time regardless?
Yeah, no, I mean, I would have gone quicker if I could have. I mean, the reality is we were the largest land-based casino operator in the UK that did not have an online offering. And we have a large inactive database of players that we know empirically is gambling with online products. And we know, since we didn't have one, that they weren't gambling with us. So, you know, the economic thesis is, you know, the economic cost of acquiring these people and the ability to retain them, as we already have a relationship with them through our bricks and mortar operation, is that a scaled, you know, we're not starting, we didn't build our own technology. I don't have 100 programmers in Israel or in the UK or, you know, somewhere else working. We're with a great partner, Aspire, that has a platform with us. We're not putting our name on the strip, which is controversial, but we wouldn't have tried to put our name on the front of the Manchester United jersey, which is quite expensive, or, you know, a massive television budget. We're going softly. You know, our customers are gambling online. Now we have an omni-channel offering for them. We think we have a nice product for people that are gambling online that aren't bricks and mortar customers. If you become an online customer with us in Glasgow or in London or, you know, Manchester, one of these places where we operate, then you can get a bricks and mortar relationship with us as well. You can get this omni-channel relationship where, you know, we can take care of you when you come in. So, you know, we just think with, you know, solid aspirations, but manageable aspirations. We're not looking for world domination in marketing spend or spend on tech, but this is just a real nice, once again, it all goes back to being customer centric. This is an offer for our customers, an expanded offer for our customers that, you know, we think will be win-win.
Well, I gotta say, I like that answer, because all too often, I feel like I talk to a lot of these operators, and when we get on the topic of iGaming and online platforms, they like all of a sudden almost like lose their head and start like expounding on like all these different things. And I'm kind of like, I don't know, you know, I'm kind of like, I don't know about that, but I really like your the way that you put it and the kind of framing it within those expectations, I think is really smart. So with regards to reward systems, and this is something that I'm curious about, because obviously, and you know as well, that you know, reward systems in the US are just really, I mean, they're becoming one of the most important, if not the most important tools for an operator to have in their arsenal in terms of, you know, customer acquisition, you know, customer retention and all that kind of stuff. How have you guys been building out your MetCard program, and has it been successful thus far, at least in your opinion?
Sure. Well, this company was historically owned by Caesars, that has its historical roots in Harrah's, and my coming up through the business was with Harrah's as well. And I think, you know, I was witness on the sideline to some revolutionary work by Gary Loveman and others in building out the loyalty program. Clearly, as we acquired the business from Caesars, we have to cut the umbilical cord to their loyalty program and move on and do our own thing, which we have done. But those of us that remained in the business from being owned by Caesars, and certainly my heritage and legacy with the business, certainly appreciates what a good loyalty program has done. I love that Jackie, our head of marketing, came up with Jack Queen King Club Ace. You probably tell me that was done somewhere else, but I'm so used to diamonds and platinums and, you know, medals all over the, you know, scarce metals all over the world. I love our Jack Queen Club Ace program. And as always, it's trying to, you know, build a relationship with customers that, you know, behooves them to spend time with us. You know, others have said that the casino business is not always monogamous. People visit two or three casinos on a trip. You know, I certainly know with my hotels and my loyalty program and my airline and my loyalty program that the first place I look for a hotel or for a flight, and I might, if a price or a time of a flight gets me somewhere else, I might book somewhere else, but my first choice is always, you know, with this specific hotel brand and this specific airline brand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what we want too. We have, you know, skilled and competent competitors here in the UK market. And, you know, I hope a rising tide floats all boats and we all do well on a go forward basis. And the government recognizes tax contribution, employment contribution, capital spend, in, you know, contribution to tourism and all these things, I hope collectively, which we lobby together to try to explain to government all the positives of this industry. But at the same time, you know, I'm fiercely competitive. If someone's walking down the street and, you know, at Leicester Square, there's four different companies within, you know, a very short walk that you can walk in the door, I want to have an entanglement of reasons. I want it to be customer service. I want it to be the quality of the food. I want it to be the breadth of the product. But I assure you, I also want it to be the quality of our loyalty program that someone says, if I stay here just a little bit longer, do I get to another tier? Do I get, you know, a different, you know, reward? And I want that to be on spend on food and on beverage and on entertainment and, you know, all these different offerings. I just want people to be excited to, you know, participate in our company.
No, I get that for sure. And, you know, just from my perspective, like I said, in such a short amount of time to see you guys, you know, propping up all these pillars of a business like this, it's honestly impressive. One thing I want to talk to you about as well that I feel like doesn't really get that much attention and or focus is the North African market. Metro obviously operates three Egyptian venues. What's the current North African landscape in your eyes? Because, you know, I sit here as somebody who, you know, works for a global, you know, gaming publication, and I read all these reports from Australia and the US and UK and Asia and feels like everywhere else but Africa. And what is kind of your view of North Africa as it stands right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if I'm a geopolitical expert on North Africa, but certainly there's a variety of places that people, you know, in that part of the world like to go to, you know, R&R. Yeah. And, you know, historically that's been Beirut and Lebanon. And tragically that city has had a number of challenges that you might need someone more astute and educated than me to explain.
That's a different podcast, yeah.
the geopolitical drama there. Yeah. Dubai is one where right now there's no gaming. You know, we're watching Wynn and the development there. Wow. With an interested eye. And Cairo is another place that people in that part of the world like to go to. You know, there's world-class hotels. We operate in a Four Seasons. We operate in a Hilton that's right in the center of the Four Seasons is by Giza and the pyramids. We've got pretty good geographic proximity. So we have one out by the pyramids. We have one in the center of town near the Egyptian museum where, you know, King Tut and other things are on display. We have one out at Heliopolis by the airport in a place that's rebranding as a Waldorf. So we're in these luxury, we're partnered with these luxury hotel brands and the owners of these businesses, and you have tremendous tourism in the region with people that are looking to rest and relax. So there's a reasonably vibrant business, and some folks have been more regional in their travel, and less not the 10-hour 8-hour flights, the shorter flights, and I think Cairo has really benefited from that. Morocco also, to the extent that I follow that, has a thriving, casino business as well. So, you just look for the things that an established operator you need. You need a good regulatory environment. You don't want to be in the wild west. And if you have good tourism infrastructure, if you have a good regulatory environment, you can set up a nice little business in Cairo. So,
well, that's fascinating. Like I said, I don't really get to hear much of anything coming out of that market, so that's fascinating for sure. We've had a really wide-ranging conversation so far, and I thank you so much for joining me. But I'll get you out of here on this. What's next? What are the next 2 to 5 years look like for you and the rest of the team?
Yeah, look, we want to continue our strong year-over-year growth. We have spare licenses in London and Birmingham and Leeds that we would like to deploy. If we get, what I hope will be coming literally in months, not years, if we get, a good sense of, visitation coming back, we would like to, continue to roll out the Metropolitan brand with refurbishments at existing estates. We just won the compliance team of the year in Europe. So I hope, in a very strict regulatory environment, I hope we continue our compliance adherence and excellence. 2 months of our online business, we'd like to continue to grow that. So, that's pretty basic, isn't it? But grow the existing business, potentially with refurbishments and rebranding, expand the business and look for new channels like online and, the white paper. We didn't talk about sports betting, potentially allow sports betting. So, I'm pretty sanguine and optimistic about our future here. So I think the future is bright. In London, you don't have to wear shades, but the future is still bright.
Well, that's a great way of putting it. And Michael, thank you so much for joining me again. And best of luck to you and Metropolitan moving forward.
All right. Thank you so much.
We thank you for joining us on this episode of the GGP Podcast, sponsored by IGT. With IGT's Resort Wallet, your players will experience the convenience of digital transactions throughout your resort property. Learn more at igt.com/cashless. To learn more about Jim, Interblock Gaming, and all the important issues in gaming, subscribe at ggbmagazine.com. To stay current with the weekly news of the gaming industry, subscribe to ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss an episode of the GGB Podcast by subscribing on Amazon, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts today. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.